What is serverless? What does that mean?
Serverless is very interesting naming in the first place, right? Because you think there's no server. So what we mean by the name is that the server is not in your basement. We mean that it's in the cloud instead. So if we go away from the naming of the whole serverless and say, what does it mean? Well, it means it's event-driven programming. And that means that your code is only going to run when a certain event that you want to listen to happens. And what that event could be is, for example, a web request. Someone says, hey, I want to go to slash products, or maybe there's a queue message, or maybe there's a database that says there's a new row. There are all kinds of events that can happen in the cloud, and you can say, sit there with your serverless function code and say, I care about this event. And if this event happens, then I got a few statements and I want you to run those statements. So that's essentially what Go allows us to do, is to listen to something interesting and run code because of it.
Okay. Now, I could still do that with just like a normal web server. So why would I use serverless to do something like that?
Well, so a web server is kind of limited to a web request, right? It's really good with web requests, but what if I want to listen to a queue message? How would a web server even attempt to do that, right?
Right.
It needs to speak the protocol of the queue, or maybe if it's a, you know, some other type of event that happens in the cloud, you need to speak that protocol. And that means that you need to write a lot of code to connect to that thing, listen to that thing, parse the message in a way that's very specific for that event type, right? And because serverless, at least on Azure, exists as a framework, that means that all of those connection points, all of those how to interpret the message, that's written for you, right? So the whole point is to have a Lego almost, right? Event type, here's a message type, and off we go, right?
Okay. So where would I use serverless? What types of applications would I use serverless in?
So I usually have an example where I say, hey, if you, for example, have an e-commerce app, I tend to tell people, okay, everything in your app is not going to run 24/7. You definitely have business flows that are very seldom. So I usually tell people, I'm sure you have a onboarding customer flow, right? Every time you get a customer, do you have this specific thing that needs to run? And it doesn't happen that often unless you're Facebook, right? I mean, every time we get a new customer, it's probably once every 2 weeks or something like that.
Right.
When that happens, we need an entry in a database. We need an email sent out that says, welcome, whatever the customer's name is. There's all these small things that needs to happen, but they're seldom. So one aspect of serverless is that it should only be reactive code, right? Something specific, business specific happened, that new customer happened. And because it happened, I need to run that code. So one of the first thing I tell people to do is identify those scenarios. And once you have those, start to encode those as a serverless app. But there's also another aspect with serverless that's interesting. It's not only seldom run code, but because it is seldom run, it means if you think about the cloud as a hotel for your app, if it's up 24/7, you're likely to pay a certain amount. But if your app is only supposed to run a few seconds every month or every week, your cloud bill is going to be less, right? So as part of serverless is that it's very cheap. So it makes sense for people to save money by identifying those parts of your app that you can just yank out, make serverless, and say, hey, my cloud bill actually went from here to here.
Okay. All right. So it sounds like then I'm looking for things that are going to happen periodically, but might be kind of expensive. That you were mentioning, like, I need to update a database, and I need to send an email, and I might need to call some other services. And like, that's a fair amount of work when a new customer joins. And that's not something that's going to happen periodically. So I need to make sure then that I'm not paying for the processing power that it's going to take for that constantly, that I only pay for it when that happens.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, so we have this notion, at least on Azure, but I'm sure other clouds has it as well. But when you run that function app, you only pay for the execution. And normally when a function executes, it takes maybe a second, right? And it's using some ROMs. And in fact, the first million calls you do to a function app doesn't cost you anything. But what
the
you do pay
million.
For is first million calls.
Wow.
So you can imagine that the serverless part here is not the expensive part. But I just want to tell folks that just because you select serverless doesn't mean you have zero bill. I mean, you still have the whole storage bit, the fact that you talk to a database, that might still end up on your bill. But the serverless part is definitely, you know, you need to work to build up that bill.
So if all of a sudden I'm getting a large bill for my serverless app that's just there for generating new customers, then that's probably a good sign that all of a sudden we've got a bunch of new customers. I should celebrate then.
For sure. I mean, one of the things we usually say about serverless is that it scales with your business. So if you got 1,000 customers, you know, a week, and you have a large bill, it's because you're making a lot more money, and we're just here to take a small cut.
Small cut.
Well, I mean, you know how it is. A business is a business, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. So Manuel asked the question, can functions grow at the same scale of the load that it has to manage?
Yeah, I mean, so one thing we need to realize is when we're talking about Azure Functions, it's built on top of something. It's built on top of App Service. So if you think about that as a model, that means that App Service is usually where you have an app and you deploy it, like a backend API, for example. And so the model, the way that Azure Functions is set up is that you have the function app, which is your point of scale. So if you got 1 million people, that means that that function app will be scaled up in X number of instances. And inside of every function app, you might have n number of endpoints. So let's say you got 5 different endpoints to handle 5 different Azure function scenarios. So what's different maybe from other cloud providers is that we don't scale per function endpoint, but rather the function app. It's not a huge difference for you when it comes to the cloud bill. It's just how our inner model looks like at Azure.
Okay. All right. And Simeon asked a question, is it like an MVC? And I'm going to assume that the MVC he's talking about is Model View Controller, unless there's another MVC that he might be referring to there.
So if we're talking about MVC.net, for example, I would maybe compare it more to a web API, right? Mm-hmm. You have X number of endpoints that's running. MVC might be that you're using some kind of page-based server rendering model. So if you can move that comparison towards the web API, I think we have the right idea.
Okay. And then he follows it up with this question is, in a serverless, do you have API configuration on your endpoints?
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of things that you can configure in an endpoint, right? One of the things you have is that you configure is the trigger type. Because you can have an HTTP trigger or a queue message trigger, database trigger, one of those configurations you do is that you configure how it triggers. And then you can also do like a route configuration. So if you want it to be /API/products, you can do that. Or if you just want it to be /products, you can do that as well. Now, another thing that you also configure is your outflow, because you can end up to send the input to somewhere else, right? So you have the notion of an input and an output. And as part of that output, you want to configure whether that ends up in a database or an Excel file or as a text message. So there are all these options for you, you know, if you have the whole input output notion.